Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
A tip of my hat to the Mid-America Crop Life Association for holding the Obamas accountable for their new organic White House garden. Now, I've always been against organic foods. If I wanted to ingest something a hippie picked, I would eat an auto harp. So I was glad that Mid-America Crop Life sent the first family a letter warning them to consider using crop protection products like pesticides and to recognize the importance and value of America's current agricultural technologies. Exactly. Without those technologies, we wouldn't have Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybeans, which are resistant to the toxic herbicide glyphosate. If we don't douse our crops with glyphosate, how will the runoff get into our fish? Now, these are some people who love the taste of glyphosate.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Is it safe? I think that was the question that was asked in Marathon Man of Dustin Hoffman by, do you remember?
I would never have gone to see Marathon Man.
I don't think I ever saw
it. I just like violence.
Is it safe? Is it safe? And it was, what's his name? I can't remember the great...
Laurence Olivier.
Asked, is it safe? Dustin Hoffman going, oh, yeah, it's safe. in his Dustin Hoffman way. And that's the way I feel this morning. Is it safe? Is the holiday over? Do we get to go back to not blowing up the neighborhood? Is that okay? Whew. I posted about that on Facebook the other day, and I apparently hit a nerve or two. Carol, I don't know if you saw that.
No, I did not. I've been out of the loop this week. Sorry.
That's okay. Unfortunately, I live out of the loop, and everything was blowing up. Maybe in the loop, it wasn't blowing up.
Well, no, it takes about a week. I feel like we're going to hear it.
Yeah, you'll hear a little bit here, a little bit there. Somebody goes back into the drawer and goes, oh, look, there's a couple of M80s I missed.
Right.
Look at that.
Right.
Or they're saving them for Sunday night for some reason.
You know, a lot of people thought you were cranky, but they weren't in our neighborhood. We are talking about not 1 second at the height of it for an hour or two. There was not a second without an explosion.
Well, and you have pets. You have cats.
We have one.
Okay.
One poor kitty was hiding under the dining room table the whole time.
You got to close.
No, then she went and hid under the bed.
Yeah.
You got to close the shades and...
It doesn't do any good.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know,
they can hear it. And dogs. So I did this post on Facebook about how I was not a fan of the 4th of July. I love it. Love my country. Great. The holiday, not so much.
Well,
really
I love
don't care.
The idea of a 4th of July celebration where there's a parade down Main Street and all the school kids sing the national anthem and the mayor gives... a speech about freedom and you know, that sounds so great. That's not what happens anymore.
No. especially in a big city. Especially anywhere, I think, because I had responses from all over the place, suburbs, probably the country, you know, just stuff blowing up and people saying, really, is this, do we have to do that? Anyway, I blame John Adams for this, of course, who wrote to Abigail and said that the, you know, July 2nd should be, and he got the date wrong. What's wrong with that guy?
Well, not like he was there.
I know. You got the date wrong. July 2nd should be celebrated with fireworks and parades and bonfires and whatever.
I have a friend who went to a 4th of July party where they sat around and read the Declaration of Independence.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
They read the original Declaration of Independence, and then they read the H.L. Mencken ordinary language version of the Declaration of Independence.
Now that sounds like a holiday celebration.
I'm sure they drank a little too.
They might have. That's, by the way, Kathleen Thompson, who is the publisher of this tome I am holding in my hot little hand, and I know Carol's got one too, and I know Denny's got one as well.
I do. Thank you so much.
I'm just like Santa Claus here today, handing out books. Attack of the Killer Asparagus and Other Lessons Not Learned in the Garden. I have my book. It's in boxes in the car, and elsewhere, just ready to go because we're having a big celebration on Thursday, which we will get to in a little bit. But I just thought I would mention that. I'm very excited, and the whole purpose of having Kathleen here today is just a total shill for my book launch party on Thursday.
Well, yes, it is, but, you know, I'm willing to talk about other things, too. If anybody wants to know about publishing their own book, they should call in and ask. I'll tell them the little bit I know, and the little bit I know and the lot I know about the problems.
But you know what?
So.
And again, we'll get to it because Kathleen's going to actually, Kathleen has a new book that's just out, and she will share the stage with me on Thursday. And our friend Andra Medea has a new book that's just out, and the three of us will be there hawking books, putting our book hawking hats on.
But it's Mike's book launch. We're
but it really is
guests.
Mine, and I'm going to be doing readings. And one of the things, Carol, we should make sure that gets posted on Twitter, and it already has been, and on Facebook, is the book launch party at Women and Children First, which is one of the great independent bookstores in Chicago. And it is this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. But again, we'll get to that. Rick DeMaio weather, as always, at 9:45. We get to talk to him about hurricanes and torrential downpours and the fact that he got mentioned. I was impressed. I was kind of impressed with myself, too, because he's my meteorologist on my show. Metropolitan Water Reclamation District Commissioner Deborah Shore sent out a newsletter the other day, and she mentioned that she had conversed with Rick DeMaio. She says, my friend and meteorologist Rick DeMaio, she called him after the big rainstorm to get more information. And, of course, he had it. And I'm sure he'll be very modest about it. But, you know, he is friend to the politicians, Rick DeMaio, and friend to thousands here on, well, maybe tens on the Mike Novak Show. So he's here at 9:45. We'll talk about that. Second hour, I was alluding to this at the top of the show with one of my favorite Stephen Colbert clips. And that is about glyphosate. First, at 10:05, Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council will be doing an update on Petcoke in Chicago. And then 8 things we hate about summer are getting worse with climate change. The NRDC had a little report about that this week. What 8 things do you think those could be?
Mosquitoes.
Anything else?
Well, that's the first 7.
And they're all on my arm right now.
Ants in the cat's bowl. Do you know we have been having, we can't leave Gata's wet food out for her at all once she finishes eating it because ants, we've got ants. They're nowhere else in our house, but they suddenly appear in Gata's bowl.
They send their little troops out to check out the good
They
place.
Do. They yeah. scout it out.
They scout it
you
out.
You know, that's why I got to have Rick Moskowitz from A-Plus Pest Control back on the program. We've been talking. He and I have been communicating lately, and he'll have some solutions. As a matter of fact, I took some of that. Now, he might be listening and say, no, that was the wrong thing to do. But I have some of his cedar oil.
Which is great for when you're sitting out on the porch. You can spray a little on yourself and then spray a little around you, and you just aren't bothered.
It's perfectly safe, and it smells like you opened a cedar trunk, and it's very pleasant. So I sprayed it around her area, and I haven't seen him since.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I gave it a shot. I thought, you know,
cool.
This might work. But at any rate, Josh Mogerman, NRDC, 8 things we hate about summer are getting worse with climate change, what we can do about them. And then at 10:30 hour, half hour, David J. Zaber, who is a friend of the show, and he also happens to be a resource ecologist, environmental toxicologist, science educator, and knows his stuff. I started talking last week about glyphosate, or the active ingredient in Roundup, and just how toxic it might be and how it might persist in the soil and in the water. And I realized, well, I'm kind of over my head here. So I bring in the people who know. And this should make Annie Haven happy in California, if she's listening right now. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And I would advise you to go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. Kathleen knows because she helps put the thing together. I wrote about 44 pages worth of stuff.
He really did. And I have to find images, photographs to fill the left column when he does that. And, you know, that I can stay up until midnight.
But you didn't.
I didn't. I threw that in your lap and said, okay, what am I supposed to put over here?
We even have the molecular structure of 2,4-D on there. What radio station has given you the molecular structure of 2,4-D on their website?
Right. So really, you should go to this week's show and just, you know, I had to work pretty hard to get that stuff up there. Somebody needs to look at it.
She had to work hard. I write 2,000 words, and she's the one working hard. Okay. At any rate, there's a lot about what's going on, including a kind of disturbing thing, which is that folks are trying to put together two really toxic chemicals, Roundup, well, actually glyphosate, and 2,4-D. You know, it's bad enough that we have each of them. 2,4-D is used in a lot of lawn care. It's part of your weed and feed often. It's not the only thing that's used. There's like 30 different chemicals, believe it or not. But Dow AgroScience has proposed something called Enlist Duo Herbicide, a mix of 2,4-D and glyphosate. What could possibly go wrong? And we're going to talk about why that might not be the best idea ever. And I hope folks will call in. As always, 773-763-9278. You can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. We'll be posting. Facebook operators are standing by. And Twitter operators are standing by. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show. Read all about what we're talking about. I always have links if you want to follow up. You could spend a few days looking at all that stuff. You can listen to the podcast once it's up, usually the next day or so. Go to MikeNovak.net, click on podcasts. We're streaming live at MikeNovak.net and also at ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Last but not least, what was last but not least? Oh, yeah, my sponsors, my wonderful sponsors. Go to the home page of the show, and up on the right-hand side, upper right-hand side, it says, Our Great Sponsors. Please click on that and support them. They support me, and you should support them. All right, we'll get to talking about Attack of the Killer Asparagus in just a second. But in the name of organic gardening, it's pirates versus bugs. Of course, I'm talking about Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. Can I have an R?
R. That was sad.
It's Carol, you know, Carol. I just love the power I have. I just tell these women in the studio, go, act like a pirate. And they do. Much better. Bonide's all-organic insect control contains spinosad, a product first isolated from a naturally occurring soil-dwelling bacterium that was collected on a Caribbean island from an abandoned rum distillery. And I say that because you need to know it. It's important. This fast-working and effective product works two ways, on contact or when the insect feeds. Captain Jack's controls all kinds of insects like caterpillars, beetles, spider mites, borers, and more. You can use it on vegetables, berries, and other fruit, flowers, trees, and shrubs. It's all organic. And the insect control comes in an easy-to-use dust or a liquid concentrate, as well as ready-to-use and ready-to-spray containers that have built-in applicators. Pick up some of Bonide's Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew today at Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, Graff Gardens in Worth, and Bertholdt's in Elk Grove Village. Or go to Bonide.com, B-O-N-I-D-E.com, to find a retailer near you.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
And that's one of those great sponsors that I was talking about, Christy Weber Farm and Garden. Maybe you should stop by this afternoon. I think it's going to be a lovely day and a great day to pick up. I'm sorry?
It's a very cool place.
Okay. Yes, it is. It's a wonderful place. There they are in the middle of the city, and it's an explosion of color on Grand Avenue. So it's stop on by. And on Thursday, this little book here, which is also known as...
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Thank you, Captain Jean-Luc Picard. whoa, what? Dive. Wow, what's going on over there? Did you just lose power? Aha. That's what happened when Kathleen's computer loses power. It complains in a very vocal way. We've got plugs in here. You can plug it in if you want.
I know, but it was faster to take it into the hall. I'll plug it in a little.
You interrupted my bit. I was talking about Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh, I am so sorry.
It sounded like the Starship Enterprise, didn't it?
I was just going to say, I thought that was something that you were doing, Mike.
So
and it got out of control.
We should get that beep thing out so Captain Jean-Luc can come back and say...
Attack of the killer asparagus.
All right.
It sounded actually a little more like a submarine. Dive.
Yeah, but in space, it's all the same thing.
Oh, okay.
It's all the same thing. So this Thursday at Women and Children First in Chicago, and as I mentioned before, they're one of the great books. You've known those folks for a long, long time. Do you know how long they've been around?
They started, on Armitage and Halstead.
That's right.
And that had to be...
I'm thinking 25 years or something like that.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. I don't know, for sure, 30 maybe. A long time. And they were there for years and years. And then they moved up to Andersonville. And they've been in Andersonville since the early 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
And it's Ann Christopher and Linda Bubon. And they've turned this wonderful bookstore into a destination, an institution. You don't just buy books there. All of the speakers that come through town, all of the writers come to Women and Children First. Jimmy Carter was there not long ago when he had his book about women, politics, and religion.
And you ran into and had your photograph taken with
Temple Grandin. Yes, I
we have a photo of Kathleen and Temple Grandin.
I was so excited. Gloria Steinem and everybody, Maya Angelou, they've all been at Women and Children First. And it's one of the reasons that bookstore has survived when a lot of independent bookstores have gone under, is that they have become a real support for the community. And they even have guys like Michael who have books that have nothing to do with women appearing at their bookstore. Michael got a special in Mike. Got a special invitation from Ann Christopherson at Women and Children First. He walked in there one day and she said, why don't you do your book launch at our bookstore? So
I didn't know what to say except yes, of course. So it's this Thursday. And of course, for those who have been who don't listen to the show on Sunday on a regular basis, and maybe you're listening for the first time, I am also a columnist for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine and have been for the last 11 years, going on 12 now. And in the back of every issue is, 700 words or so of my wisdom and so-called wit. And we put basically about the first 6 years of those into this book, which means that there's room for volume two at some point. But first things first, let's get volume one sold. And we just got it from the printer this week. And we will be and we had a Kickstarter campaign also to raise money to do the publishing.
And quite a few of you listening were supporters of that Kickstarter campaign, and you'll be happy to know that you will be getting an email tomorrow asking you where to send your book. We have the books ready to ship. We have the 100% post-consumer recycled, what do you call those bubble things when they're not bubbles? Envelopes. You know, we have those.
Mailing envelopes.
Yes. Ready to go. On the other hand, if you're in the Chicago area and you want to save one of those envelopes and save around the block breasts and postage, you can show up.
See, this is what a small company does. It's like, show up in person, and then we can just hand you the book.
That's right. You can show up at Women and Children First that night only and pick up your premium at the party.
But we do encourage people who did not take part in the Kickstarter
to come by and buy a copy of the
book. Yeah, because I'm going to do a reading.
And you don't have to buy a copy of the book to come to the party.
Right. You can just come and eat some hors d'oeuvres and have a glass of wine or water or whatever you want.
We will have fruit juice.
And fruit juice.
They don't have to drink water if they don't drink wine.
Water's healthy. It's a good thing.
It is. But Mike's going to be reading from a couple of excerpts from the book. So you know you're going to get a few good laughs. And also you'll get to meet some of the other people who listen to the show, which is kind of cool when you think that you've got all of these compatriots out there, people who share this in common with you, that you listen to the Mike Novak Show. And now you can show up at Women and Children First in Andersonville and meet them.
We should give the exact address for some people.
That would be 5233 North Clark. And it's at 7:30 Thursday, July 10th.
Now, Carol, are you going to grace us with your presence?
Yeah, actually, I was saying that earlier, that I am going to do that.
I just wanted to make sure. So yeah. People, you know, have a
so
reason.
So all my fans.
All your fans.
All my fans out there.
And they are legion.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you realize that.
Oh, yeah.
What have we forgotten here? Oh, how to get the book. Okay. If you're interested, the place I would advise you to go to is aroundtheblockpress.com. That's the easiest way. Now, that being said, it's in all the usual places
Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And the other thing is you can go into your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you because they can. It's available from the distributors. So you can get it right in your own neighborhood. And I just, since I have the book in my hand right here, I thought I might read what a couple of people have said about the book.
Oh, dear. Do you really want to do that? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, right. Anyway, Amy Stewart, and some of you may know, the New York Times bestselling author of Wicked Plants.
Who has been on this show numerous times.
Yeah, what besides Wicked Plants, what was that?
Wicked Bugs.
Bugs. And then that one about plants that you make alcohol out of. I can't remember the name of that.
I can't remember it.
Plants or something like that.
The Drunken Botanist.
Okay.
How about that?
So Amy wrote this about the book. Mike Novak is one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticulture world today. I never thought that a description of powdery mildew would make me laugh out loud, but that was before I picked up this book. I've loved his radio show for years, and I'm so delighted to see his work in print at last. So she's delighted to see you in print. And then Beth Botts, and you guys probably all know Beth Botts because she's an award-winning garden writer for the Chicago Tribune and Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps and confusions and playing them for big laughs. And this is just in case you don't believe me when I say this is probably the funniest book ever written about gardening. And then, and Mike Bryson was the director of sustainability studies at Roosevelt University and author of Visions of the Land, says, warning, you will learn a fair amount about actual gardening in this book, even the scientific names of plants, for instance. But you will also laugh until your throat hurts and you have to lie down. And that's true, too. So that's...
And I did not have to pay them all that much money to write those things.
And it's
just a little
completely
bit.
A coincidence that all three of them have appeared on your show at one time
just,
or another.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, and I have to play... Actually, I'm going to digress for a second here.
Well,
is that
that's
okay?
A surprise.
Yeah, being the most distractible person in radio. I got an email from Candace about cat food and ants.
Oh, really?
And she writes, remember that cat's sense of smell is much greater, so if you spray the cedar near the food, the cat may be overwhelmed by it. A hungry cat may eat anyway, but it may not be a pleasant experience. I took that into account. I actually cleared the stuff out and then kind of wiped it down and didn't put the food back right away. I moved it to another area. And she didn't seem fazed by it at all.
No, I was going to say, I didn't even know all this was going on. And I would have if...
Why are you laughing,
Carol? Because she doesn't know what's going on. What else don't you know, Carol?
a lot. Carol, I can't even begin to imagine all the things
just
I don't...
Stop it right now. Okay.
Now, Margaret on Twitter was also saying spraying white vinegar around the bowl.
So. And vinegar just takes care of a multitude of sins.
We buy it by the gallon.
And there's so much you can do with vinegar. But that's a really good point because Candace continues, you may want to try placing the food bowl in the center of a plate or larger bowl of water so the ants get caught in the water and die before getting to the food. I kind of like that idea.
Wow, an ant trap.
An ant trap. It's like the slug trap. The beer slug trap in the garden, if you put beer in a dish and you put the bowl at soil level, the slugs go after the beer and drown in it. And all I can say is, what a way to go. And the other thing that Candace recommends, she says, try Taro Ant Killer. It's pet safe. I'm not familiar with Taro, T-E-R-R-O. It acts as an attractant, so you know it's working when the plastic container starts to draw many more ants than you had before. But then they bring it back to their nest, and eventually it kills every ant if you don't mind killing ants. So you don't get repeat customers after a while. And give us an update on air in the future about whether the cedar keeps on working. I'm curious. I used peppermint oil, 100% concentrate, but it is too potent/pungent. To get close to food sources, I would think peppermint. But peppermint is one of those things. And I'll bet, and I will get Rick Moskowitz from A-Plus Pest Control on the show.
That's a very good idea. He really knows his stuff. And it's not just that he has good products. He also he really knows what to do about all kinds of different pest situations. And the only problem is that he likes to bring his guitar and sing theme
his
song.
Jingle.
His jingle, yes.
I've got that here. I could probably find it. I would have to track that down. But I wait a second. I would have to find it here.
But anyway, those are some good suggestions. We'll have to try them because we. It got to likes to have the food sitting down there for, a couple of hours.
Guess
anyway,
what I found?
So go back and nibble what?
If you've got ants, if you've got mice, if you've got roaches, don't think twice. Call me. We do it like we live there.
Ouch, that hurt me. That hurt just to listen
you
to that.
You had to do that.
I had to. Okay. Hey, listen, we got a phone call pouring in. Let's go to the lines and bring in Richard. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you, Richard?
I'm so sorry.
About?
About not showing up for my interview with you on when I was supposed to come to the studio about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
You know, I had forgotten that. You could have gotten away with that one, Richard.
You haven't spoken to me since. When I called in on the phone that morning to say, I'm sorry, I'm not there, you said, yeah, right, goodbye.
This is Richard Hensel.
Oh, you're kidding. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks.
He's an actor extraordinaire in the city of Chicago. You might have seen him do his Mark Twain, which is, I would say,
legendary.
It's a good way of putting it. And a bunch of other stuff. You probably hear his voice in commercials all the time and other places. And you don't even know it. So do you...
They would know me if I said one phrase.
Can you say it?
Rise and shine, campers. Don't forget your booties because it's cold out there today.
Oh, gosh, that's you.
Oh, my goodness. And from the film.
From Groundhog Day,
yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah, Groundhog Day.
And I still have a gig. Every Groundhog Day, I have a 7 a.m. curtain.
Really?
Out in Woodstock for 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. And you come out and say that phrase?
I say that. I do the whole thing. I have to do Rob Riley's part, too, because he only went one time.
and said, I've had enough of this, right?
Yeah. He said, I don't care if they do give you a hotel. I'm not going back out there. Too early to be acting.
Richard, you will do anything just to get a little stage time, won't you?
Well, I love Woodstock. I love the people. You know, the Mark Twain show's played out there more than a dozen weekends or weeks over the past year, since 1978 when I first performed Mark Twain out there. So that's kind of how it happened, was my relationship with the town and with the Opera House.
I love Woodstock, too. I believe it or not, I shot a film out there like in 99, a funny little kids film called Bored Silly that you can't find anywhere, and you can try, but you won't be able to.
And Mike played the grumpy old scary guy at the junkyard.
Basically, he's a feral guy. Yeah. So
did you call about cats and ants or about Mike's book or what?
About Women and Children First.
I called because I remember that Women and Children First had a place before Armitage in Halstead. I should have run up and asked Jenny. She probably would know. Because Jenny and I used to go there before we had kids, and that was over 34 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I do remember it being like on Broadway. And I remember, because we lived near Armitage and Armitage and Halstead, and I remember thinking, oh, I moved closer.
Huh.
Didn't it move into the old puppet place, maybe? No, I'm wrong about that.
I don't know.
A place on Broadway first?
I kind of remember another place before the one at Armitage and Halstead.
It's not possible that you're thinking of a different women's bookstore, is it?
No, it's possible that it's moot.
Okay, because I had a feminist
bookstore. I'm sorry I brought it up.
No. I owned a feminist bookstore on Halstead. Just north of Belmont for years. And I was just wondering if it was possible that you were thinking of that one.
I doubt it.
That one was what?
I doubt it.
Oh, okay.
But and maybe. But that was early in the 70s.
Yeah, we moved here in 76.
No, then it wasn't that
right.
One.
That's kind of what I figured. Oh, well. Well, Richard, thank you so much for reminding me that I'm not supposed to be speaking to you.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that.
And, my pleasure.
And thank you for giving us, give us your line one more time. Come on.
I can do the whole thing if you got 30 seconds.
30 seconds, go for it.
Okay, rise and shine, campers, and don't get your booties, because it's cold out there today. It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach? Not hardly. You can expect hazardous travel later today with that blizzarding. Oh, yes, right here, the National Weather Service calling for a big blizzarding. But another reason people are especially excited, especially cold. Okay, but the big question on everyone's lips, their chaplet, do you think Phil's going to come out and see his shadow? Punxsutawney Phil. That's right, woodchuck chuckers. It's Groundhog Day. Get out and check that hog out there.
Wow.
I've done it before.
Well, all I got to say to you is...
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
So, Richard Hensel, thank you so much. Have a great Sunday. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If I'm talking to him at all. Okay. And before we wrap this up, Kathleen mentioned that what you and Andra will be doing also at the bookstore on Thursday.
Well, Mike was very nice and... invited me and our friend Andra Mendia to also sign our books at Women and Children First at the party. We have both published books for teachers, professional development for teachers, through a company called Capstone Publishing. And
you got real serious all of a sudden here, and your voice got really kind of...
You know what happened? I put on my earphones.
Oh, take them off. Then you can just talk.
Oh, that was... Woo.
That's painful.
Like that.
I know.
I put on the earphones and I could hear my voice. Yeah.
I just try to ignore my own voice coming back into my head.
Okay. So The book that I wrote is called Examining the Evidence, Seven Strategies for Teaching with Primary Sources. And it sounds pretty dry. It's not really. It's a lot of fun. But it's for teachers. And so we're not, you know, it's kind of got a niche audience, not having big publication parties and things like that. Andra's is an amazing book called Safe Within These Walls. It has a subtitle I can't remember, but I can tell you that it is a book for teachers about how to reduce some strategies for reducing the likelihood of violence in the classroom. And Andrea has written several books about conflict resolution over the years. Her book, Conflict Unraveled, won awards and caused quite a discussion in some circles because she has developed a very important method called the conflict continuum. Well, she has worked in the past with social workers and lawyers and mental health professionals. The federal government has hired her to work with veterans. And all of these people, she has worked something she calls the virtual tranquilizer. And it is a way of dealing with people who are agitated or who are in conflict or who have probably emotional and mental problems and just situations of that kind. And she has applied all of this to schools.
And the idea of violence and part of it, you know, she got this idea, and I forget the guy's name who did the original study, but he worked with divorced couples. Well, it was couples therapy and not just divorce, but people who are in conflict in couples. And he found out that there were certain patterns in the way people behave, and he discovered this concept of flooding where the, you know.
Right, flooding is only a small part.
I know, and she took that and ran with it. You know, that whole thing, and has come to written some wonderful things about conflict management, and that's part of what she does.
So she's written this book for teachers about schools called Safe Within These Walls, and so she'll be there too, signing her books, and you can also talk to us and, you know, hang out with
us. Or just come out and, you know, just have some fun. So it's Thursday, 7:30, Women and Children First. On North Clark in Andersonville, 5233. We hope you'll be there. And this has been a commercial for Attack. Wait, it has been a commercial for
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Thank you, Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Did you explain the WP the MP3s?
No, that, I haven't.
That, okay, just very briefly, the reason Mike has that voice, Dan Gately.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Dan Gately, who's one of the Frozen Robins and several other of the Frozen Robins, recorded four of the Twisted Christmas carols
that I write every season for Chicagoland Gardening
and
Magazine.
And they're a part of the book Attack of the Killer Asparagus. And
I mean, and the people who did the Kickstarter got this as a premium. Here's just a sample.
Locusts we have heard on high, sweetly humming o'er the hood, and the crickets in reply wish that they could sound that good.
Okay, that's all you're getting. That's a premium for the people who were on the Kickstarter, and they get to download it. And if you want to, well, at some point, I'll make it available. And before we go, because Rick DeMille has to come in here, Dan Costa from Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale tweeted us, repel mosquitoes by burning an incense stick near where you are working outdoors. Smoke repels mosquitoes and it smells good. And he also wants to let us know that he has got a new blog called Dan the Plantsman. And it's danTheplantsman.wordpress.com. And he's got some cool stuff up there. So I thought I should do that for Dan. Rick DeMille weather is coming up.
In the Green Room.
You dig?
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com. Right in your own backyard.
I didn't mean to do that. I meant to fade it out gently, but that didn't happen. Now, nothing makes a hot, humid July day even more depressing than a statistic like this one. Did you know that an estimated 90% of North America's historic fruit and vegetable varieties have vanished? A big reason is that we don't save seeds anymore. We assume we can just buy them at any old liquor store. Or maybe that's just me. Anyway, the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine has a story about how to save seeds. For that information, they went to the folks at the Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, also known for Eagle Cam. For example, with tomatoes, the seed is mature when the fruit is ready for eating. But with cucumbers or zucchini, the seed is not mature until a while after market maturity. Who knew? Then there's my column in the back of the magazine, which we've been talking about on the show this morning. Like the cheese in the Cheez-It commercials, it never seems to be particularly mature. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine at locations all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, bird baths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
In 1979, the American Community Gardening Association was formed in Chicago to provide leadership and advocacy for the community garden movement. Join us August 7th through 10th at the Field Museum as we celebrate the 35th anniversary of ACGA at our annual conference. Thursday, August 7th, starts with a pre-conference at Cam Isaiah Israel, focusing on gleaning and food pantry gardens, followed by a farm fresh welcome and networking dinner. Friday is a day full of workshops, roundtables, and keynotes, followed by an epic garden soiree and silent auction at the historic Garfield Park Conservatory. Saturday, we're in for a national networking event, presentations, and an afternoon of tours of some of the most vibrant community gardens the city has to offer. Sunday concludes the conference with a second-story performance of Voices from the Community Garden, highlighting personal experiences of how Chicago community gardens change lives. Don't miss this historic event. Join us August 7th through 10th for the American Community Gardening Association Conference and be part of the vision for the next 35 years. For more information, communitygarden.org.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I got a really fancy guy who does my weather forecast for me. It's meteorologist Ricky D., otherwise known as Rick DeMaio.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rick. And do you know how I know how fancy you are?
How fancy am I?
I got a newsletter from MWRD Commissioner Deborah Shore, who referenced you.
Yeah.
And I saw that you sent it to me. I had already seen it. In fact, it's already up on my website, MikeNovak.net, if you go to this week's show. And she talks about how after the storm, and this is funny because after the storm, she wrote about it. And then apparently she got some blowback from people who said, you don't understand the severity of what just happened. And apparently she picked up the phone and called you and you kind of explained it to her. Do you want to tell me about that?
Yeah, well, I've known Deborah Shore for, six, seven, 8 years, and I bumped into her at a climate conference. I don't know if you call it that. Someone was talking about global warming, climate change at Oakland Community College about 3 or 4 months ago. And, you know, we bumped into each other, said, how are you doing? And I said, as always, if you need anything, you know, give me a ring or an email. And sure enough, the day after the heavy rain event, on Wednesday, she called me up and she wanted to know whether or not she, you know, missed something or needed more information on something, or whether or not the rain gauges at the MWRD, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, has access to, were actually doing what they're supposed to do, which is capture heavy rain events. And sure enough, they weren't. So I just kind of did some research, and, you know, I mean, I love to do that kind of stuff. So looking at where the heavy rain came down, the timing of the event, this was obviously last Monday night. I remember we talked on Sunday. I said we were going to have a couple of different bouts of heavy rain, and we certainly got it with tornadoes as well, although those were really, really minor tornadoes, you know. That's another thing. But what I did was I just looked at you know, COCORAS data, which is something that Patrick Sketch is very interested in covering as well, which is more or less a cooperative volunteer weather network, and then also co-located that with Doppler radar estimated rainfall. One of the things that you have to do in research is you just can't find one source. You have to find at least two. And I found two that kind of said that the rainfall that came down across the area where the Chicago River drains was not only much heavier than what some of the rain gauges said, but the intensity, meaning how much rain came down a short amount of time, was literally off the books, off the charts. And that's one of the reasons why they had to discharge water back into Lake Michigan late Monday night. And that's something that they obviously don't want to have to do. And I hate to say it, Mike, but we're in for another one of these 1-2 punches.
No.
Late tonight, yeah, late tonight and probably the Monday night into Tuesday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So
of the same intensity, because leading up to the one last week, it was like walking around in soup outside. The humidity and the dew point were so high.
And you know what? It was interesting because the dew point got up to about 74, 75 degrees, which, you know, is really, really high. But it seemed to be coming from everywhere. You had to kind of get that feeling like wherever you walked, it was humid.
Yeah.
And part of that was because we've had so much rainfall, 7.5 inches for the month of June, made it the fifth wettest ever from an official standpoint. And I always have to say that because officially our rainfall records go only back to 1988 O'Hare, 1928 at Midway, before that University of Chicago, and then before that downtown Chicago. So the sites have changed. And if you look at just Midway Airport since 1928, Midway Airport had nearly 9 inches of rain. So it was the second wettest for Midway. So I think parts of the city outside of O'Hare Airport and even parts of southern Cook County and eastern Will County, I know you have a lot of listeners down there, have easily had over a foot of rain. In addition to that, one of the things I mentioned to Commissioner Shore is that we've had so many days of cloudy, cool, foggy weather that what that does is it lowers the ability for the ground to evaporate into, you know, a bright, sunny, kind of windy, dry day. So when you do get humid, and this is what I mentioned before about it seemed like everywhere you went, you felt the humidity, everything has actually moisture in it, and everything is beginning to evapotranspire into the atmosphere. So I think, in a sense, even someone of Commissioner Shore's position, you always have to remember that you're, and I'm not saying this from a lesson standpoint, but you always learn more about the environment and the atmosphere when you had these extreme events. And that's definitely what last week was. It was an extreme event. And we had, nearly 2.5 to 3 inches of rain. There was a couple of spots that had nearly 4 inches of rain. And because the ground was so wet, it wasn't evaporating. That's one of the reasons why the amount of rain that we had flooded not only the channel, but also a lot of forest reserves, and is now making the mosquitoes as big as ever, I think you're going to attest to as well.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It's although I have to admit, I don't know. I haven't been outside very much. That's part of my problem. So I haven't encountered a lot of mosquitoes, but I'm hearing reports.
Oh my God, they're terrible. I actually had mosquito bites on top of mosquito bites, and well, because they go, well, there's a big one, I might as well suck out what my neighbor just put in there as well. But yeah, no, the fact that we had that amount of rainfall last week, and then leading up to that, prior to that, the ground has been very, very wet, not really able to evaporate. That's one of the reasons why the rainfall was actually proved to be heavier than it did.
So you say a week later, you know, 6 days later, we're headed into a similar event. And where we turn in terms of the evaporation of, you know, what's the saturation point of the ground and how bad will this be?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we've talked before about how we get these evaporation rates from NIU and also the Chicago Botanic Gardens. Typically this time of the year, if you remember back in 2012 during the drought, we were probably evaporating about a half inch of moisture out of the ground, or at least 4/10 every 24 hours. In this type of environment, we're only doing about 0.15 to about 0.20. So you're generally down about 200% from that. So whatever rain you get, instead of taking 2 days to dry out, it takes 4 days. We've had some dry weather the last couple of days, which is good. It's helped things out. But I do think temperatures responding very well to sunshine today, probably up to about 88, 89, 90 degrees. Dew point temperatures will probably get into the low 70s, so a very humid day. And then as this weak front comes through, the pattern has been such that these air masses become very hot, very humid. And because the jet stream is still rather strong across southern areas of Canada, representing still very much the pattern that we had back in 1993, where it's very cool across the northern Rockies and wet in the upper Midwest, this will produce a rain event similar to last Sunday night, which was generally about a half inch to about three-quarters of an inch. That's going to come through later on this evening, could see some severe weather. And then a second, more potent, slower event comes through Monday night into Tuesday. So when you look at it, even though these are fast-moving events, they're not, quote, super heavy-duty rain events. By the time we're talking by Wednesday morning, we can have an additional 2 inches of rain across the area.
Hokey smoke, Bullwinkle.
And then back to cooler weather for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with highs only in the low 70s.
Wow. Interesting, interesting summer. But as we always say, no such thing as normal, right?
No, not at all. Not anymore, Mike.
All right. Rick DeMille, fancy guy, guy who talks to politicians and tells them what they need to know. We will talk again next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a great Sunday.
All right, you too. Second hour, we talk glyphosate. We talk about Petcoke. We talk about the summer, as Rick DeMille talked about, and how it might not be getting better for us, and I hope you'll stick around for that.
The Crop Life Association knows that spraying our crops with insecticide is as American as apple pie with a dibromochloropropane crust. Just look at this classic ad for Raid.
A little kills insects that attack flowering plants, evergreens, vegetables.
Ah, I'll never forget those delicious beefsteak Raid Mados. One bite, and all you could say was, mmm, because your tongue was paralyzed. We'll be right back.
The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Thank you all for lots of folks out there and the Twitter machine, including the folks who say, Rick D on the show, my weather guru. Well, he's my weather guru as well. He's the go-to guy, I'm telling you. He is right so often, I find it scary. I really, really do. Let us go to the phone lines and bring in another guy who I really respect and appreciate having as part of the team. And that's Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council, otherwise known as the NRDC. Josh, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Okay. I'm not sure if you're actually, are you in town or are you elsewhere?
I am downstate in the mighty capital city of Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, dear. Listen, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but the session is over. They've all gone home, haven't they?
Yeah, it's safer to be here now. It's much more pleasant.
All right. I have to ask you, do you do a lot of talking to our elected representatives down there in Springfield?
I do not, but I grew up in a semi-political family here in Springfield. I am a native Springfieldian.
No, nobody's native to Springfield. Come on. That's not true.
I grew up in Springfield and I was a Springfield High School senator.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's the there are three high schools in Springfield. One of them is Springfield, and their mascot is a senator.
And the senator do backflips and then holds his hand out for cash?
It does confirm all the horrible things you would expect, yeah.
I'm trying to imagine that what the mascot does that represents the elected representatives, you know?
He does the yoga.
What?
He wears a toga.
And then crawls on his belly like a reptile.
Yeah, well... Yeah, you know, it's what we do here.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't read. That's actually, I like that idea. That's what you call an unusual mascot. But why not?
That's how we do in Springfield.
That's how we do it. It's great to have you on the show. I know that you've all, and I appreciate it on a holiday weekend, when you can't track down anybody else. There's Josh. He's ready to go.
This is always fun. So I'm happy to be on, and there's plenty to talk about, right?
Yeah. And let's start. Let's come right back to the city for a second. Because I know you've been working with the Southeast Environmental Task Force.
Yeah.
About the Petcoke issue in the city of Chicago, which is still it's still an issue. This hasn't gone away. It's not going to go away for a while, you posted just a couple of weeks ago, on June 12th, about the latest, and it starts with the EPA, which has been doing monitoring of the Petcoke piles at KCBX on the south side, southeast side of Chicago. What did they find that was so interesting?
Yeah, so, you know, there have been all these problems around these two facilities that are holding this stuff, and a lot of concerns from the neighbors regarding air quality, and particularly the issue of those little itty-bitty particles that get stuck in people's lungs and create health problems technically we call particulate matter. And
can I stop you there? Because if you go to various sites that are pro Petcoke, and it's hard to imagine somebody being pro Petcoke. And Petcoke is a byproduct of the tar sands oil refining process. What they tell you on those sites is there's nothing particularly toxic about the substance. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would respond in a couple of ways. So first of all, there's very, very limited health studies that have been done on the impact of Petcoke, petroleum coke, to human health. If you dig down deep into some of those studies, there's some really troubling things associated with it. But the fact of the matter is the headline on a lot of those studies is not a big deal. Those studies tend to be industry funded. That's part of the reason why Senator Durbin has asked the CDC to study this issue. There are some other bills in Congress because I think there's a recognition that there that there are perhaps some significant issues. But while we don't have a ton of information about the impact that pet coke has on the public health, we have tons of information on the impact of particulate matter, of these tiny particles. And that information is very, very clear that it's a huge problem for the public health. When you breathe this stuff into your lungs, it lodges in tissue. It actually can get into the bloodstream. It can raise incidences of a variety of respiratory and pulmonary health issues. It can lead to early death. This is a really significant problem, and it's part of the reason that we closed the Fisk and Crawford coal plants in Pilsen and Little Village a couple years ago. So we know plenty about this stuff in Chicago, and so because of those concerns, the U.S. EPA put up a variety of a number of air quality monitors to track this stuff. And we're now getting a look at some of that data coming around. And in the first raft of the stuff that was made available to the public, we see 2 days where you have huge high levels of this stuff at the fence line of the KCBX facility at 108th Street.
Which, by the way, I had the opportunity to visit on a tour with the Southeast Environmental Task Force several weeks ago on our Southside tour. That was one of the stops. And there we were outside the KCBX terminal, and Tom Shepard from SETF was doing his explaining, you know, what was there. And of course, we were under the watchful eye of security for the whole time.
Yeah, they have definitely tightened up their monitoring of the edges of this facility because of all of the attention that's been on it. But it's such a giant facility, it's pretty impossible to miss if you're over in that part of the city. It's right on the edge of people's neighborhoods. There's a baseball diamond half a block away on 110th. So, you know, the implication that this is a benign presence that is not a problem for people of Chicago, and particularly on the southeast side, is really undercut by this data coming from the US EPA. So they issued a couple of citations. They also noted that in a letter to KCBX, that when they dusted, when they wiped the exterior of a number of houses near the facility, they found vanadium and nickel, which are, you know, really really telltale signs of pet coke, of oil refining.
Well, you know, what else would you be finding there? I mean, if you've got a layer of soot of some kind, was KCBX going to make the argument that it was coming from someplace else?
Well, you know, there's a lot of industry on the southeast side, and there had been an implication from KCBX and from another holder of this material that, you know, this is a problem that is not unique to what they're doing, and so that's why these dust wipes are really important, because the other industrial facilities in the air are much less likely in the area, excuse me, are much less likely to be emitting vanadium and nickel. Mm. These really are telltale signs of oil refining. And just to clarify something you said, petcoke comes from any oil refining, but it comes out in huge volumes when we're dealing with heavy oil, particularly tar sands from Canada. The BP Whiting refinery, as part of its the source of most of this stuff on the southeast side, is tripling its output of this stuff to 6,000 tons a day, 2.2 million tons a year. That's all going to be coming to the southeast side, and so you can understand why people in the neighborhood, they're not just concerned. They want this stuff out. They don't feel that this source of pollution is an appropriate thing to be in their backyards, at the edge of their schools and their parks. And, you know, frankly, we agree with them.
Let's clarify one other thing while we're doing a little backing up here. And that is that this problem is relatively new, or at least it was discovered, what, about a year ago, right, when SETF was suddenly noticed these piles forming at KCBX and also Beamsterboer on the south southeast side. When did the and from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, the EPA monitoring stations are relatively new as well.
Yeah, so this problem, I think, started emerging about 2 years ago. It got really hot and heavy last summer as we started to see more and more of this stuff come up. I mean, I'll never forget, I was on a tour with the task force, and we were talking about the BP refinery, and in driving back into the city from that spot, we drove over the bridge at 106th Street, and they pointed to this line of about a mile of these huge towering black piles along the river, and they said, "Yeah, that's where all the petcoke is from the refinery," which just blew my mind. This is NRDC has been working on a variety of issues and legal fights around the BP refinery for years, since we started in Chicago about 7 years ago. And this was an issue that we'd always been wondering about. Where is this stuff going? We'd see the petcoke show up as feedstock for all of these very dirty fuel operations. People may remember the discussion of a coal-to-liquid refinery that was being discussed for the southeast side from a company called Leucadia. There was a huge uproar over this years ago. Well, it turns out that was being planned to go in next door to the biggest of these petcoke holding facilities, and it would have burned the petcoke. This was and remains a really big concern for folks in the neighborhood, that they are once again being dumped on and having, you know, whether it's the fights that they had over solid waste, which you know all about, Mike, going back into the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's we're having, you know, waste from oil refining coming in and potentially having it burned really close. So they have been waging serious battle on this issue, and I think making real headway. One of the things that they won was forcing a lot of attention from regulators at every level of government. One of the things that came out of that were these air monitors. And so right now the US EPA has air monitors at the corners of the two KCBX sites, and they're monitoring for the larger of the larger type of particulate matter, and you know, we're seeing some pretty scary hits right off the bat. The task force and NRDC have been calling for, well, you know, we're getting good information from this. The public needs this information. We need more, and we sent a letter to US EPA asking for real-time data to be made available to the public so the community can have, you know, current information about conditions, not find out about things weeks later.
Yeah, that's one of the things you've actually been complaining to the EPA about. The NRDC has said, you know, your information, you're lagging on getting that information. As you say, you want real-time information so somebody can see what happened this morning. You know, I would imagine that's because if there's a wind or a cloud, a dirt cloud of some kind, they want to know if it's that petcoke.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, you know, people need to be calling if they're seeing giant dirt clouds or black clouds floating through the neighborhood. They need to call in and report that. But you know, this is a source of stress and consternation for an entire neighborhood. These people are really concerned about the impact that this is having on their community. And so, if nothing else, having access to this data in real time is a way for people to know if there is a problem, if there's a trend, and to figure out how they want to deal with things and live their lives in that area. You know, we just finished the 4th of July, where, you know, most everybody ends up going to a backyard barbecue. Well, folks on the southeast side don't feel like that's what they should be doing. They don't feel like it's safe to have those sort of things, particularly in really close proximity to these massive mounds of refining waste. And you know, the data coming out of these US EPA monitors bolsters their concerns. So we think that there's a lot more information that the public needs. And, you know, obviously we think that there needs to be a significant tightening on these folks. The mayor has said he's going to tighten things on the regulatory front until they just move out of town, which I think all of us who are working on this issue would support. But
All right. Let's just get to the mayor for a second here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to the city council vote earlier this year, and there were noises about how they were going to ban pet coke. Well, that never happened, okay? And the mayor did not support that. He said we need to encase it wet it down. And they said they have state of the art systems for addressing these issues, but it'll take a couple of years to get them up and running. And now, from what I'm hearing, it might be more than a couple of years.
Yeah, that is the newest concern with all of this. So now the city has both the regulations that it's passed in terms of handling and moving pet coke in the city, and they also have the ordinance that was supposed to ban the expansion of this stuff in the city. And now we're seeing the other shoe dropping, and that is a series of variance requests coming in from KCPX and from other facilities that are holding this stuff in the city. And normally, variance request is the sort of zoning stuff that makes people's eyes glaze over and they want to, you know, they start snoring. But this is some scary stuff that's coming in here. You have from KCPX, the largest holder of this stuff, a request that's tangential to their variance. They have a plan that's part of what they've submitted to explain their enclosures. And one of the things they mention is, oh, by the way, we don't think we can make it within the 2-year time limit that's been imposed by the city. We need 4 years.
You know, and it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure out that you could.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's my thing. I've decided that it's, you know, it ain't rocket surgery is what I say now. And it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure out that the company is going to stall. And when they say 2 years, you got to have it done. You know, the company's going to come back and say 4, or they're going to, and then after a couple more years, they'll say, "Well, we really need 6," and suddenly it's a decade, and nothing's been done. And I'm sorry, I think the mayor and the city council are being namby-pamby about this, but that's my personal opinion. But you know, it's easy to see. And meanwhile, these kids in the neighborhoods are sucking up this stuff, and it's being proven by the EPA monitors there. It just seems like we just bend over backwards for the companies that are polluting our landscape. It's frustrating to me, Josh.
It's frustrating for, I think, anybody who's watching this. The folks in the neighborhood want this stuff out, and I think that is. Again, I think that's a fair concern. They view this variance request as the pet coke pilers thumbing their nose at the city, thumbing their nose at the neighbors, and it's really going to be hardening the resolve to get this stuff out and to push things. The city felt that legally they did not have a strong enough case to be able to ban this stuff outright, and are going through a process to make it tough on them. And these variance requests will be a very interesting way to see how serious they are about that. This is really sort of the first test for the city's resolve, and I'm hoping that what we'll see is the city say, "Heck no, we're not going to be pushed around on this issue, and no to this raft of variances." Our lawyers are still digging through to figure out what exactly is being asked for, and we'll have a lot of information for folks to look at once we've really dug through that. But I think the top line message here is. What the city is calling for is not what the folks in the neighborhood are calling for, and what the companies are willing to do is even less. And folks in the neighborhood are going to be fighting this stuff.
That's Josh Mogerman from the NRDC on the Mike Novak Show. Your questions and comments are welcome at 773-763-9278. In fact, let's go right to the phones and talk to Laura. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yeah. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good.
I have just a couple of questions for Josh. Josh, could you repeat what you found in the particulate matter? It was nickel and
vanadium.
Cadmium?
Vanadium.
Can you spell
vanadium.
That?
V-A-N-A-D-I-U-M. Hey, Dr. Lawyer, how are you?
Hey, how are you? So then the other thing is have you done a full toxicology of the samples of pet coke that you're getting from the air monitors? And I know that there have been some people that are collecting their own kind of samples of this stuff that's ending up in their yards. And then my last question is about the BP spill. We found out that what spilled in Lake Michigan was definitely tar sands oil or heavy crude, what they call heavy crude, and that the spill reflected a malfunction in the plant and that there's been several malfunctions in the plant. What are you finding out about this plant? Is this plant being operated, you know, in a way that's conducive to anybody's health in Southeast Illinois and Northwest Indiana?
So let's see. So the first question was about the toxicology screens on those samples. Just to be clear, those samples are US EPA samples. I know that there are some efforts in the neighborhood and elsewhere to do more of this sort of collection of samples and a variety of efforts are underway and things that show the amount of soot and dust and particulate matter being dumped on the neighborhood are sort of showing up elsewhere. Right now, this is stuff coming from the regulators. My guess is that US EPA has done a full toxicology screen, certainly to be able to highlight these two specific heavy metals. They've done some, and hopefully we'll see more information and more data on all of the rest of it. As far as BP Whiting goes, I think it is abundantly clear from the statements that came out of the BP Whiting folks that this was indeed tar sands and that this is indeed a function of a malfunction from equipment as part of this very big expansion. For folks who don't know, the BP Whiting refinery is just outside of the city limits of Chicago. It's about, I think, maybe 12 miles from downtown. And it just finished a $4 billion expansion to process ever more of this very heavy, thick, dirty tar sands crude from Canada, which is a concern because it is so heavy, it contains so much sulfur, so much heavy metal, but also because when you're looking at a climate perspective, this is the baddest of the bad stuff from a carbon perspective. So there's no good news on this, and it's made worse when you have an oil spill coming from the refinery going directly into Lake Michigan, as we had earlier this year. That was the result of oil being shunted into a water treatment portion of the refinery. And this is indeed a piece of equipment that has had a long and ugly history. A few years ago, the refinery operators realized that it had been venting benzene into the air directly.
Nice.
That's a carcinogen. They were surprised. They didn't know how benzene would even get into that facility. And yeah, the refinery has been a problem. They've had a variety of issues pop up during this expansion. They had a couple of fires that hurt workers. They've had a couple of pipeline spills that have impacted folks in Northwest Indiana. And there's the larger issue of the immense plume of air and water pollution that comes out of this facility. And there was a huge uproar last year over the amount of mercury that comes out of this refinery directly into Lake Michigan.
Well, we've had the mercury issue for years, for decades. You know, this is nothing new. Thank you, Laura, for the call and bringing up the oil spill. That's really kind of disturbing as well. There's this oil spill, and I don't think we actually got all the information on exactly how much oil was spilled and how. What I understand, we're still waiting for some of that, aren't we?
Yeah, the initial result or the initial announcement from BP was it was a barrel. Four barrels, something like that. The next day, there was a huge influx or increase in the amount that's there. I have not seen final reports from either the Coast Guard or US EPA, both of whom were overseeing the cleanup of that. And I think there are, you know, really significant concerns that come out of this, not just because of the kind of oil, but just any oil going into Lake Michigan in close proximity to water intakes for Northwest Indiana and for the city of Chicago. Anytime you have this happening, it's not something to take lightly, no matter what the size of the spill was.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, 20% of the world's fresh water and you start spilling, you know, and we've got the tar sands pipelines underneath it, and all it takes is a rupture of one of those and, you know, bye-bye clean water. And it's all very disconcerting. Josh Mogerman from the NRDC, hang on a second. I know we got a couple more calls I'm going to try to get to. And we might even get to that the other story we were talking about, which is the ways that our summers are being affected by climate change. Eight things we hate about summer, and they include heat waves, bad air alert days, ticks and mosquitoes. I hope we get to that, but we'll continue this for just a little bit longer, and we'll be right back with Josh. Now, through the eyes of a deer, do your flowers look like a smorgasbord? Is your vegetable garden an all-you-can-eat buffet? Bonide can fix that problem. Repelzol is an all-natural repellent that works against deer, rabbits, skunks, squirrels, chipmunks, raccoons, and many other nuisance animals, and it stays effective for up to 2 months. The all-natural ingredients in Repelzol use smell, taste, and irritation to keep animals away. Unlike other repellents, Repelzol has no unpleasant odor, for human beings anyway. It can be applied to trees, shrubs, perennials, and around edible crops. Repelzol is available in concentrate, ready-to-use, and ready-to-spray liquid formulations, and in easy-to-use granules in a 3-pound shaker and 6-pound bag for spreader applications. Look for Repelzol products at these fine stores: Sonoris Brothers in Frankfort, Karp's Garden and Feed in Hobart, Indiana, and Red's Garden Center in Northbrook, or visit bonide.com to locate a retailer near you.
I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you. You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment by using an organic, slow-release fertilizer like Milorganite. Over 60% of the nitrogen in Milorganite is water-insoluble and is delivered to the roots via microbial activity, which means the little critters get working, and that's how they get the nitrogen to the plant. Microbial activity occurs when soil moisture is adequate and soil temperatures are between the 55 and 85 degree range. When conditions are not favorable, Milorganite's nutrients stay in the soil until conditions are right for root uptake. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you.
Hi, this is Ron Calga from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
1, 2, 3, my baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. What does she really want? I can't stand to see me walk out the door.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're talking to Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. And let's go back to the phone lines. Penny in Lansing, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, BP is located in Whiting, Indiana. Why does Illinois allow Indiana to throw their garbage out here? I'm tired of it.
That's a really good question. Josh, how would you address that? Josh?
I muted myself. I'm sorry. the problem that we have here is, within the refinery setting, this material is legally considered one thing, a waste product. When it leaves, it is considered something else, a byproduct. And that means that legally they're handled differently in those two settings. So, yeah, the refinery is in Indiana, and when it leaves, it comes into Chicago in a variety of ways. It comes via boat, via train, via truck, via barge. And the reason it comes to this area is that, frankly, the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois weren't prepared. We knew that this project was underway. We knew that there were real concerns about pollution going into the water and going into the air. But the city and state governments did not think about this issue of solid waste, and so as a result, it's largely unregulated. And there are facilities in place in the southeast side of Chicago that were ready and willing to take this stuff that used to hold a lot of coal, and that's been slowing down. And so in its place, we're getting a lot of pet coke. And this is something that. That Rahm Emanuel, this is almost a straight quote from Rahm Emanuel when he announced some of the things the city was doing to deal with the issue. He admitted that both the city and state were flat-footed, and there's a scramble underway to try and get caught up.
To some degree, our laws are laxer than those in Indiana, from what I understand, and I just found that amazing.
Well, things are perfect in Indiana.
Things are what?
Things are perfect there.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but
I live right on the border.
Yeah,
I'm on the border with Munster. Things are perfect there.
I get your sarcasm, and I appreciate the call, Penny. And it's an issue for both states right now, and that's a really good point, Josh. That the state of Illinois was caught a bit flat-footed with that.
Well, one thing that I think is important is it's not just an issue for Illinois. It's not just an issue for Indiana. This is a national issue. We have a huge increase in oil refining. And particularly refining of tar sands oil going on throughout the Great Lakes region. There is a huge influx of this material that's baked into the cake. We need to have a realistic discussion about how to deal with it appropriately so we don't have this stuff ending up in people's backyards. This issue popped up in Detroit.
Well, I was just going to mention Detroit, and then the piles disappeared in Detroit, and guess what? Nobody knows where they went.
We know they went to Ohio, where they were likely burned. We don't know where, what.
Okay, so we did find that out, because at the time I reported on this last year, and there was some concern about not knowing where they, and I speculated, did they end up in Chicago? Some of this stuff. Who knows? They just got rid of it in a hurry in Detroit. But as you say, if it went to Ohio, well, Ohio doesn't need it either.
If there's a state that doesn't need it, it's Ohio. But Ohio is a place where we're likely to see more of an influx of this stuff. You have two refinery operations that are seeking to expand to take more tar sands oil that are going to be producing significant increases in pet coke if this stuff moves through. And, you know, there are facilities that are burning it in Ohio right now already. There are facilities in Indiana that are burning it right now already. But the question needs to be, what are we going to do with this stuff? How are we going to move it so it doesn't just show up in people's backyards? And how do we ensure that it's not a huge influx of climate pollution, carbon pollution, that comes from this stuff that undercuts the good work that's underway to deal with the issue of climate change?
Well, we don't have time. I need to get to my next guest. So we're not going to be able to get to our second story, but it's on my website, and it's called 8 Things We Hate About Summer Are Getting Worse with Climate Change and What We Can Do About Them. The NRDC put it out this week. I'll tick them off for you, speaking of ticks. One is heat waves. Two is bad air alert days. Ticks and mosquitoes, poison ivy, sneezing and wheezing, foodborne illness, dangerous swimming conditions, and ruined visits to national landmarks and parks. And all of these are being caused in one form or another by climate change. And the NRDC takes a look at these, and the link is there to the story. So I'm going to tease our folks who are listening with that so they can go to that link and check out the story from the NRDC, because I want to get to David J. Zaber here. So, Josh, thank you so much on this holiday weekend for being with me.
Thanks for having me. Great show today.
All right. We will talk very, very soon, I am sure.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Just in. I need the news bed. This just in, classes are back at Christy Weber Farm and Garden at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago this Thursday, July 10th at 7 p.m. If you're not going to be at Women and Children First in Chicago for the launch party of
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Yes, Attack of the Killer Asparagus. You can visit Christy Weber Farm and Garden to attend their vegetable garden maintenance seminar. Anna Maria Leon, who is a master gardener, says that vegetables expend enormous energy blooming and producing fruit. Our job as gardeners is to make sure they have necessary resources to be healthy to keep on producing. She'll talk to you about maintenance practices. That includes water management, pest management, pruning, and more. Stop by and learn from a pro. Find them on Facebook or go to CWFNG.com or spell it out, Christy Weber Farm and Garden.com. Just this week, they posted about the arrival of ninebarks, hydrangeas, boxwoods, yews, St. John's wort, alpine currants, and more. They're all at Christy Weber, as well as they had a terrific article on the Facebook page from the Center for New Technology that asks the musical question, are you rain ready? I'm not answering, because you can find out there. Christy Weber Farm and Garden, let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in mosquito dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
In 1979, the American Community Gardening Association was formed in Chicago to provide leadership and advocacy for the community garden movement. Join us August 7th through 10th at the Field Museum as we celebrate the 35th anniversary of ACGA at our annual conference. Thursday, August 7th, starts with a pre-conference at Camp Isaiah Israel, focusing on gleaning and food pantry garden, followed by a farm fresh welcome and networking dinner. Friday is a day full of workshops, roundtables, and keynotes, followed by an epic garden soiree and silent auction at the historic Garfield Park Conservatory. Saturday, we're in for a national networking event, presentations, and an afternoon of tours of some of the most vibrant community gardens the city has to offer. Sunday concludes the conference with a second story performance of Voices from the Community Garden, highlighting personal experiences of how Chicago community gardens change lives. Don't miss this historic event. Join us August 7th through 10th for the American Community Gardening Association Conference and be part of the vision for the next 35 years. For more information, communitygarden.org.
Stretch of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Time to go back to the phone and bring in David J. Zaber. David, how are you?
Hey, Mike. Good to hear you.
Good to talk to you, too. And, of course, David is my buddy from up Madison Way in Wisconsin. He is a resource ecologist, environmental toxicologist, science educator, has taught at Northern Illinois University and the University of Wisconsin. And you and I have been having a little conversation this week about glyphosate, otherwise known as Roundup for folks. And it started last week on this show when somebody was who called in and said, you know, my neighbor sprayed something a few years ago, and I'm not sure if it's safe to plant, and I need to know. And I said, well, you know, and I said, how long? He said, maybe a decade. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure it's safe now. But it does bring up, it raises questions about the use of some of these products and how long they persist. And you sent me some information. I said, you know what, you got to be on the show and talk about this. Now, one of the things you wrote to me about glyphosate, again, which is the active ingredient, and we'll get into inert ingredients in a second, you said it's very soluble in water and very stable in water and a wide range of pH levels. Is that good or bad when you say it's soluble in water and good and very stable in water? What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's a good question, and we have been talking about that a lot, Mike, and the issue is it's neither good or bad on as a blanket, but it's depending on the use and the application. For something like glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup that people are aware of, they see it in the Menard shelves and things like that, that material sticks to soil very well. And in soil, it can break down. Maybe the half-life is, what, 30, 35 days. And
when you say half-life, it means
half of the material is gone. So the time it takes for half the material to, let's say, break down in the sun, or for mercury, the half-life in the human body is about 80 or 90 days. So you eat a piece of fish with mercury in it, about 90 days later, that'll be at a half-life. It'll be half the concentration originally.
Okay.
And so it attaches to soil fairly well. It doesn't move through the soil very quickly. But once it's in water, it doesn't break down nearly as fast. Most of the glyphosate goes into the sediment once it's in water, and it's staying there. And when you don't have a lot of bacterial processes going on, a lot of little critters, little plants and animals eating this stuff and metabolizing it down in the soil or in the sediment, that starts to accumulate. Not only that, is you know, in water, it lasts a long time. So in multiple pHs, if you want a broad spectrum, you know, chemical that'll last under a lot of conditions, that might be a desirable quality. But with pesticides, It's not. The issue with chemical pesticides, synthetic insecticides primarily, as well as plants, is to get it out there, have it do its job, and break down and go away.
But if you look up glyphosate, and one of the things I've been told over the years is that the line that was always used was it does not persist in the soil, whatever that means. And if you and then I went up and looked at a Wikipedia entry about it. It said it's moderately persistent in the soil, as you mentioned, half life of around 47 days. However, it has a half life has been detected as long as 174 days.
Well, and that's a really important point, Mike. So it depends. First of all, when people talk about something being persistent, that's basically an undefinable term unless you put it into context. So what are the longest-lived chemicals? How long do they last? What happens when other ones come in, you know, are released? They break down quickly. And where does glyphosate fall in that? But it's always relative. However, so let's say you've got a very healthy system, a lot of soil microbes, you know, doing good things. You use some glyphosate, or your neighbor does. It drifts over or on your property. It attaches to those soil particles. If there's a lot of phosphorus in that soil, glyphosate won't attach as well. So when you look at something, let's say a very degraded farm field, you know, clay, not a lot of bacteria, lots of chemical uses over the years, that glyphosate may last a lot longer because you don't have those soil microbes there to break it down. So this is the issue. There's a lot of evidence, a lot of information out there. Hey, it's persistent. Oh, it's not persistent. It's safe. I remember people used to say, glyphosate is safer than aspirin. And, of course, my response is, well, that's why we don't give aspirin to children anymore. That's why, you know, aspirin isn't always safe. And what we're finding with glyphosate is that the more research that's done, regardless of whether it sits in that soil or not, if it's on those plants and in food, it appears that it's having, even at very low levels, adverse effects on gut microbiota. In other words, the bacteria in our guts that are critical for our immune system and digestion can be harmed by even very low levels of this. And so a spectrum of adverse effects, discrepancies on how long it lasts and where it moves, but basically it will stay in that soil. It doesn't travel very far unless conditions allow it.
Okay, and this is the product you see on television. You know, and a lot of times I go into a garden talk and the first thing I tell folks is, you know, you folks have to stop being brainwashed by everything you see on television. And one of the things is the guy, and it's always a guy, with the Roundup strapped to his hip, and he's a gunslinger. And we love our gun metaphors in America, don't we?
They sure do.
And he's zapping the weed, you know, and you know he's been lying awake nights for weeks because he's got a dandelion in the crack in his sidewalk. Poor guy.
Yeah.
And people go, wow, this really works. And they don't care what's in it. They just want it to work.
Well, it's funny because there's a couple of interesting aspects of this. Often, as I talk to people who are, you know, let's just, for lack of a better term, say that they're anti-government. I don't want the government telling me what to do. You know, they're bad, blah, blah, blah. And then when I say, well, what are you spraying on your lawn here? And they're like, well, you know, that might be unsafe. Oh, no, EPA says it's fine. And so, you know, you get that. You also get, it's complex, and it's,
yeah.
And there's an effort, whether it's with the tar sand coke piles that Josh was so eloquently discussing, or any number of climate change. The issue from the promoters of pesticides or tar sands is to instill doubt and confusion, not to blow away the people, just to make them doubt and be confused, because that often turns people off.
Here's a quote. This here's something I found on Beyond Pesticides. They write, despite widespread use of the weed killer glyphosate and the prevalent myth that it is harmless, this pesticide is tied to acute human health effects and linked to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It is found in two Monsanto products available over the counter, Roundup TM and Rodeo TM. Actually, it's found in a lot of products. This was written a few years ago, making glyphosate one of the most widely used and well-known herbicides on the market. If there is one pesticide that represents the fast food, quick fix generation, glyphosate would likely be it, the MIC pesticide of toxic chemicals.
I think that's actually quite interesting. My argument would be that the MIC pesticide of toxic chemical, or the MIC toxic chemical out there, is any of the latest insecticides or herbicides that are brought out, because they're touted as saving the day. You know, back in the 70s, when Dieldrin and Aldrin were being used on corn all through Illinois, and efforts were being made to ban it, you would have thought the entire world was going to explode, given the backlash, how corn crops would be destroyed. Well, that's not true. Dieldrin was banned, thank God, and the corn is doing fine. The latest pesticide du jour are the neonicotinoids.
Yep.
And I just wanted to raise that one point, Mike, that we had discussed. On June 30th, the New York Times editorialized, in a very good editorial, that we have to clamp down, if not ban, some of these neonicotinoids. They're having huge impacts on pollinators and honeybees. Well, buried in the New York Times on that same day, in the environment section, no less, is a reporter who obviously has very little background knowledge in these issues, breathlessly touting the efficacy of the neonicotinoids against the emerald ash borer. And they cite some experts, and there's a report. So I go and dive into that report, and lo and behold, five of the seven chemicals recommended are among the most potent bee and pollinator killer chemicals out there, including two of the worst neonicotinoids. And so given that confusion, you go to the New York Times for accurate information, and it depends on where you are in the paper as to what information you get. That's very devastating.
Well, and it's true, but the problem is it's hard to keep track of absolutely everything. You know, the people separate it. They say, do you want to save your ash trees? Yes, I do. Okay, you got to use this. However, that same chemical might be killing bees. Now, which is it? Do you want bees or you want ash trees?
Well, it's a Sophie's choice of sorts. And the bottom line is we don't have to make that choice. If we do real changes on the landscape, areas for pollinators to live and breed in, surrounding fields, less intensive chemical methods, stopping the lie of genetically modified plants like Roundup Ready soybeans, which do nothing to reduce the use of Roundup. In fact, they're genetically modified to resist more Roundup because the weeds are already resistant.
Well,
they really have to saturate.
Yeah, let's get to that point really quickly here, because I want to make sure we get to this before I have to let you go. Dow AgroScience is proposing this product called Enlist, E-N-L-I-S-T, Duo Herbicide. And what they want to do is mix glyphosate with 2,4-D. Now, 2,4-D is one half of Agent Orange, it is stuff that you put on your lawn. If you use Weed and Feed, you're putting this on your lawn.
Yep.
And the reason they're doing this is because glyphosate isn't working as well anymore. So let's make it more potent and put it in, you know, and this is this death spiral we're going into with these chemicals.
It's 2 40-year-old chemicals or longer that are touted as new because they have the incredible idea of mixing them. When you're talking about Hodgkin's lymphomas and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, the 2,4-D, MCPA, dicamba, all of these what we call phenoxy acid herbicides, which basically make the plant grow themselves to death, are associated with those health effects. And 2,4-D as well in Australia recently was reported that came from China to be contaminated with some of the most potent dioxins. And so, yeah, it's an issue. And putting these two together, the estimate was it would triple the amount of actual herbicide product applied to corn, beans, wherever they're using that.
And there was a comment period and 500,000 people wrote in to say, don't do this. This is a bad. And you know what? It's got to be approved. You know it's going to be approved because we don't listen to the average person who comes in. We listen to the money.
Well, and these regulators are overworked. They're confused. The toxicity spectrum of, you know, the test of toxicity, they don't address many of the health issues, the adverse issues. And so, you know, what happens is when you, let's say you dose a mouse or a bunch of mice with a chemical and it causes cancer, the response from the producer is, well, humans aren't mice. So then we dose a bunch of mice with a different chemical that doesn't cause cancer, and they say, see, it's safe for humans.
Yeah.
You get all of these little tricks that once you figure them out, they become an easily recognized pattern.
Well, that's it. You know, we're gonna talk about this some more, David. Thank you so much, David Zaver, for being on the program. I really appreciate it. We'll go into this in the future even more.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. I'm sorry. That's all the time we have. And are you ready for this, Carol, if I say go green?
Go home.
I guess I didn't say or.
Yeah,
go green or?
Go home.
Attack of the killer asparagus.